fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Hey, heptacore, won't you heptacore me? Have a heart, won't you, baby? Listen to my plea.
In the 1960s, the U.S. government's ambitious war on poverty provided help for the first time for those who slipped through the cracks of our capitalist economy. And helping to administer those programs were a collection of community action agencies, including one that changed the face of central Wisconsin, CAP Services of Stevens Point. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, we look back at the life, the accomplishments, and the ideas of its creative and inspirational leader, Carl Pinazek, from three of the people who knew him well and helped him achieve his goals. Mary Patoka, the current CEO and president of the agency that Carl led for so long, CAP Services of Stevens Point. Central Wisconsin author and columnist Bill Berry. And joining us from Washington, D.C., David Bradley, the co-founder and chief executive officer of the National Community Action Foundation, which represents the interests of the nation's 1,000 community action agencies before Congress and the Office of the President. You'll also hear some of Carl Pinazek's thoughts and stories about the persistent problem of poverty in America from Carl Pinazek himself, recorded in a Route 51 program 7 years ago in 2008 when he announced his retirement. Now, we know that many of you listening were touched by Carl Pinazek, by his life and the work he did. Please share your stories with us. Give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. I want you to write down that number. It's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I'll read it live on the air. And we do have wide open phone banks right now. It's often easier to get through in these shows if you call early rather than call late. So Mary and Bill and David, thank you so much for being with us today and sharing some time with us in what I think is going to be a very special hour. Mary, you're in charge of the organization that Carl led for so many years. Tell us a little something about CAP Services of Stevens Point and some of the things you do.
Well, as a community action agency, we really are grounded in trying to meet the needs of low-income families in our footprint. What guides our efforts really is input from those low-income people. Every 3 years, we conduct a need survey of families in our service area to find out what are their most pressing needs? How can we meet those? And we've been conducting those surveys since the organization started. We run about 30 programs right now. They are organized around affordable housing, workforce, early childhood development, business and community development as well. But certainly Carl built an extraordinary foundation for us to continue to do our work in his 32 years as CEO.
How many people do you help each year?
We help about 2,200 to 2,300 households. And so sometimes it's a parent, sometimes it's the whole household, depending upon the service that they're getting.
Do they have anything in common? Do they come from all different walks of life? How do they find themselves in a position where they need your help?
Well, it's a combination. I think certainly the economy and the downturn we saw with the Great Recession really created a higher number of people who needed our help. They lost good-paying jobs and now might be in entry-level jobs. Those jobs don't always come with benefits. And so they're finding that their financial resources are stretched to the max.
And how did Carl Pinazek, in his 32 years with your organization, help shape it into the organization that it is today?
Well, I think there were probably two or three things that drove how we did our work. One is that needs assessment survey. We also have low-income representatives on our board of directors. So low-income people have a very active voice in our work to make sure that we stay true to that mission to meet them. But I think another thing that really shaped how Carl felt the organization need to be structured was a near closing of our doors in the early 1980s. The administration at that time was making some pretty dramatic cuts to domestic spending. And so in one quarter, we lost half of our funding and one-third of our staff. And Carl said, never again can this organization be subject to the whims of Congress. And so he really, along with the board, built an organization that created its own self-sufficiency, much like we look for in the people that we work with.
And we'll hear Carl Panasik talking about that in his own words in just a few minutes. Bill Berry, you knew Carl pretty well. Your general impressions of him and the impact he had on Central Wisconsin?
Well, thanks, Glenn. I knew Carl first as a journalist, and then later I worked for him for a few years, and Mary also. But, you know, I really got to know him as a journalist and as a City League basketball player with Carl. And the first thing that impressed you about him was he was a mountain of a man. He was a huge man, and when he walked in a room, he took up space more because of his intellect than his physical size. But, I mean, he was intelligent, he was visionary, he was compassionate, and he was a great communicator. And also a great writer. He taught me a lot about writing when I went to work for him in the 1990s.
He talked you how to write?
Oh, yeah.
You got to be kidding.
I thought I was pretty hot until Carl Panasik took the red pen to my stuff. So he just had the whole package, and, you know, the biggest part was his heart, and that was apparent to anyone who knew him.
David Bradley, you're based in Washington, D.C. You represent the interests of 1,000 community action agencies across the country. Why did you want to appear on a radio show that just focuses on one of those agencies, CAP Services of Stevens Point, and the guy who led it for so many years?
Well, the first of all, CAP Services is one of the special agencies out there. And Carl was one of the very, very special people I've ever met in my life. He was a motivator. He was a thinker. He had a kind heart, but he had a great brain and his passion and commitment. And every time I was with Carl or talked to Carl, I would leave that conversation or that meeting, that encounter, with more enthusiasm, more commitment, more fight in me in terms of doing you know, the task that we do in Washington, and that's fighting on behalf of these programs to keep his commitment to fighting poverty. Carl always reminded me that When I dealt with Carl, I realized that here's a man that could have been successful in any field he wanted to go into, that kind of a special person, and how rare it was that someone of Carl's talents would devote his life to improving his community and you know, his state and the nation in terms of their commitment to the underprivileged, and that he's... He epitomized the best that we want in our people.
David, we're having a little bit of problems with your telephone reception right now. I don't know if you're on a wireless phone. Maybe
nope. I'm on a landline here. Hopefully.
All right. Well, just speak up, and we can hear you fine, but it fades out just a little bit. You know, David, these community action agencies got their start back in the 1960s during the U.S. government's war on poverty. A lot has happened since then. How have you had to change with the times?
Well, the big there's two or three very, very important changes in the history of the 51-year history of this program. And Carl was a part of helping advise and counsel and helping me work through one of the changes. The first change occurred in the 1970s when the federal command post, the Office of Economic Opportunity, started by Lyndon Johnson and Sergeant Shriver, was downgraded. and became a much less visible, much less important agency. The second change, which I was involved with and tasked with trying to figure out, is when we went from a federal-local relationship to a federal-state-local relationship. In other words, a block grant, but a block grant to these agencies. So there, that was on the federal level. That's two very, very significant changes. But there is a third change that CAP Services and fortunately, the vast majority of these agencies around the country epitomize, and that is, over time, the support, the bipartisan support in Congress, in the executive branch, for what these agencies do and have done, has grown to record numbers. Never has this program been more supported on a bipartisan basis than it is now.
Those comments, I think, would surprise quite a few people who are used to headlines about the gridlock and the acute partisanship we suffer from today.
Yeah, they would, and there is very, very extreme partisanship in Washington, and it's both parties are to blame. But beneath that veneer of positioning for the 2016 elections or rehashing the 2014 or 2012 or 2010 elections, there is a very, very sizable majority in both the House and the Senate that are committed to doing positive things for communities, that have a awareness and a sense of responsibility toward the most vulnerable, and who support work that CAP Services and agencies like that perform around the country. And this is, I wish that there were 1,000 radio shows that we could say, you know, Congress isn't all partisan rhetoric and warfare. They actually agree on some things, including poverty programs.
I'm Glenn Moberg. If you just tuned into this radio show, you're listening to David Bradley of the National Community Action Foundation, Mary Patoka of CAP Services in Stevens Point, writer and columnist Bill Berry. We're talking about the life of Carl Ponasek. We'd like to hear from you if you were touched by Carl's life and his work. 1-800-780-9742. The number again is 1-800-780-9742. I'm going to play a clip with Carl that we recorded back in 2008 when he announced his retirement, and he's going to touch on some of the things that we've just been talking about. Let's hear in his own words how his agency, CAP Services, operated decades ago and how it changed over the years due to a changing economy and a changing political climate.
We've evolved over the years just as the economy has changed, just as society has changed. When we first started as a community action agency, we primarily tried to link up people to all the new federal programs. And a lot of people don't realize food stamps didn't exist before the 1960s. There was commodity programs, but there wasn't food stamps. Social Supplemental Security Income, or SSI, didn't exist before the 1960s. Formal employment and training programs had been ended during World War II and had never been restarted. So there are a lot of new programs that came out. Community action agencies were initially focused on getting those people hooked into those services. In 1981, we went through a catharsis with the Reagan Revolution. The Reagan Recession and the Reagan Revolution caused us to lose a third of our revenues from September 30th, 1981 to October 1st, 1981.
Were those outright cuts from the government, or was that because of some of the other implications of the economic downturn?
No, that was primarily the Reagan administration proposed and Congress disposed, and we were literally lost a third of our funding. So we went through this catharsis, and we thought about what our future was. Do we really need an anti-poverty agency was one of the questions. If so, what should we be doing, and how should we be doing it? And we came upon a great truth, and that is you can hook people up to resources, but the reality is until they have a living wage job access to affordable health insurance and affordable housing, you really haven't helped them very much. You can give them emergency food, you can give them emergency shelter, you can give them emergency food assistance and fuel assistance, and they're still going to be poor. So we decided at that point to redefine ourselves. We were not going to be just a typical community action agency. We were truly going to be an anti-poverty agency that measured our success in terms of the number of people we moved out of poverty every year. Our community action agency gave up a lot of programs like the emergency fuel program. We don't run that program. We'll weatherize your house so you can reduce your energy consumption so you have more money to spend for medicine and food, but we won't just give you money and say, here, spend it for fuel. We don't do emergency food. We don't do emergency shelter, other than if you're a domestic violence victim.
Poverty is still a problem in central Wisconsin.
It is, and it's getting bigger, and it's more insidious than ever because it's affecting more and more children. And if children are poor, there's all kinds of outcomes that we don't like. They can't get access to adequate dental care. They can't get access, in many cases, to adequate medical care. They don't get enough to eat. They don't graduate from high school at the same rate as non-low-income people. They have less access to college. They're more likely to be drug abusers. You know, if you only give people bad choices, don't be surprised if they make a bad choice. And what we have to do is make sure that people have choices. They take responsibility for those choices, but that they have choices that say, okay, if you go down this path, this is what you're going to encounter, and if you go down this path, this is what you're going to encounter, and help them overcome those barriers that we all face. But in the end, we know which path is the path to self-sufficiency, and that's primarily education, good health, good housing.
That's Carl Panasik, who passed away just a few weeks ago. Let's get reaction from David Bradley to what you just heard. David?
Well, it's tough to listen to Carl, meaning I miss him dearly already. But what he said is, I think that was recorded in 2008, is exactly where his leadership, CAP Services leadership, has positioned that program. And it's not so much services, but how are we providing opportunities for those families and those individuals to break the chains of poverty and become self-sufficient and to have a good life. And Carl was in the forefront of asking the tough questions and thinking through and providing so much in terms of the answers. And so I listened to that with deep emotions, how smart he was, how dedicated he was, but how much for the rest of my life I'll miss Carl.
Mary Patoka, his comments about children in poverty and the recurring cycle of being trapped in poverty as they grow up, that's something you have to deal with every day.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we can't do it alone. You know, I think there's emerging research coming out of the Population Institute that 40% of what determines somebody's health status are things like education, employment, stress, social supports. And so we can't ignore, as Carl says, the need to give people those opportunities. I mean, the only thing wrong with low-income people is they don't have enough money. If you can get them the opportunity to take care of themselves and their family, they become just like everybody else. Maybe somebody with teenagers acting out or somebody with some mental health issues, but they become like everybody else. And so our charge is really to present those opportunities and hold people accountable. I mean, nothing's a gift.
And Bill Berry, I was struck by the fact that Carl Panasik said something that you hear from conservatives. We can't just give poor people food and money. We have to give them a job. We have to get them educated. We have to give their lives meaning.
Right. And I was impressed other than being sort of emotionally involved here when we heard Carl's words, I was impressed by the message that he had that's so important. It's one of the reasons I think CAP Services has been successful, because Carl was able to have a narrative that appealed not only to the people in Washington, D.C. who control federal funds, but to the people in our own communities, in the business community, who are willing to be participants in a noble cause, in just the way he put it. You know, CAP Services gave people a hand, but not a handout. Gives people a hand, but not a handout. It's a simple message, but it's really true. And Carl and Mary and others have imbued that throughout the agency.
Let's go to the phones. 1-800-780-9742 as we look back on the life of Carl Panasik. 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Bob in Princeton. Bob, you're on Route 51.
Morning. I used to work for a former U.S. senator. That's where I got to know Carl, and through his Fresh Start program in Wautoma. I believe that Wautoma had not seen a new house built in city limits in like 20 years. Well, Carl came in and started a Fresh Start program, which gave troubled teens a lift, gave them a something to look forward to. Not only did they get their education, their GED, but they got training. And I think right now there's almost a subdivision of Wautoma that is houses built by these young people through the Fresh Start program. And the one story that Carl told me was he had a young lady in the program who was afraid of heights. Well, by the time they were done, she was up on the roof doing shingling and ended up getting a job with a roofing contractor. That just goes how Carl really inspired people. Like you had mentioned, gave them the help they needed to turn their lives around. So he was a great man.
Bob, thanks so much for the comment. We're going to hear Carl talk about that project in Wautoma in his own words in the next segment on Route 51. Your reaction, Bill Berry?
Gosh, I Mary and I both knew the Fresh Start program well, and you know it was a wonderful program. And these are kids who really were at a sort of a turning point in their life, and oftentimes you put a hammer in their hand and gave them some guidance, and by gosh, they accomplished things that you just couldn't imagine.
Well, I think one of the most powerful things about that program is, you know, the young people, and we continue to operate it, by the way. We have projects in Waupaca now using the model where these young people build a house that we then make available for sale to a low to moderate income buyer. But they're working on their GED. They're learning some workplace skills. But, you know, I think the biggest thing, the biggest benefit that I see about the program is the label goes away. Young people get in trouble, and that label can follow them for a long, long time. And this program gives them the opportunity to rewrite their story. And the pride in which they show the houses when they're done, their parents, their teachers, everybody connected to them just say it's just this transformation. And, you know, it just makes them feel part of the community again, and they're not watching from the sidelines.
Let's go to Ray in Rhinelander. Ray, you're on Route 51 with David Bradley, Mary Patoka, and Bill Berry.
Thank you all for being on here. I didn't really know Carl personally. I ran into him time to times because of what I used to do. I used to be involved years ago with drug and alcohol rehab, mental health, dual diagnosis, all that. Anyways, the problems we were running into and were consistent in a parallel with what Cap was going through was what I call the de-evolution of social services and things involved with rehab programs. What I mean by that, especially when the Reagan administration came in, there were programs that we would help people in rehab and to evaluate them, get them into on a variety of ways, from CETA to drug and alcohol rehab programs to Job Training Act. All those things, programs were going on. And the difference now that I see, because a lot of these have actually been restructured or they're annihilated or they didn't have enough money because of that evolution, is that people look at the poverty rate now and they see, oh, all you're doing is giving them a handout and this and that. Well, that's not true. CAP has done nothing but good progressive evolution to help with that, meaning that they offered services to get people back on their feet. So my concern is I have seen these rehab programs go down, and it's been affected, and it really, really was a problem for us because we had to reroute things, redo things. We had to do things similar to what Carl had to do of finding outreach programs and everything to help people, when you can offer them temporary assistance in the beginning, but offer them a variety of ways to improve their lives, that's the only hope there is for having a person learn a different way of life, have them progressively be a contribution in their own way, and have it be positive all the way around.
Right.
And I'm very concerned about the poverty level being 26% up here, which has escalated more in other areas. And I'll take your comment off there, and thank you very much, all of you, for what you've done to help solve these problems.
Ray, thanks so much for the phone call. David Bradley, your reaction to what you just heard.
Well, there has been a diminishing of federal resources. There has been a devolution to states and the backing out in many ways of the federal partnership. That's the glass half empty. The glass half full was that it created an opening to be very creative, to be a laboratory locally, to be on the cutting edge of innovation. And that's what Carl provided for CAP services. When Washington was cutting back, Carl was adding. He was thinking about different ways to do business. He was ahead of the curve on the tough questions about, which I agree with him totally on, it's not, don't measures by units of service, but measures by how many lives we've changed and how many people we've given the opportunity and allowed them to be self-sufficient. Carl saw that challenge presented in 81 and 82 and 83. Those were really difficult years, and CAP services led the nation in terms of coming up with creative ways to meet those challenges, knowing that the federal government wasn't always going to be the full partner that we thought they would have been just a few years before that.
I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guests today are David Bradley of the National Community Action Foundation, Mary Patoka, CEO and President of CAP Services in Stevens Point, writer and columnist Bill Berry. John in Stevens Point, hang on, we're going to get to you right after the break. And when we come back, we will continue to look back at the life and achievements of Carl Panasik, and we'll hear him tell us in his own words about one of CAP Services' most innovative and creative solutions to a local problem touched on by one of our callers in Wautoma on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Here's Ray Charles.
My bills are all due, and the baby needs shoes, and I'm busted. Cotton is down to a quarter of a pound, but I'm busted. I got a cow that went dry and a hen that won't lay. A big stack of bills that gets bigger each day. The county's gonna haul my belongings away, cause I'm busted.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Stevens Point Area Co-op, Peninsula Music Festival, and Import Auto Clinic. You too can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at wpr.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Christine Bremer-Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollope, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollope, because the right results matter most. Bremer-law.com.
They used to tell me I was building a dream with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime?
As we listen to Rudy Valley sing his Depression-era anthem, today on Route 51 we look at innovative solutions to the persistent problem of poverty in America. Looking back at the legacy of Carl Panasik and the impact of the organization he led, CAP Services of Stevens Point. With current President Mary Patoka, writer and columnist Bill Berry, and David Bradley, co-founder and chief executive officer of the National Community Action Foundation in Washington, D.C. I'm Glenn Moberg. If you knew Carl Panasik, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. David Bradley, the war on poverty is something that has kind of defined your life. Your mentor was Sergeant Shriver, who said no one has done more to keep the war on poverty fresh in the hearts and minds of individuals than David Bradley. Tell us what you learned from Sergeant Shriver and those early days in the War on Poverty.
Well, the Sarge taught me a lot. Number one is that it is with a lot of dedication and work, it's possible to build a strong bipartisan coalition, number one. He never met a member of Congress that he didn't think wasn't gettable in terms of supporting a low-income agenda. Second is that to have the vision, to have the passion, to have the courage to help create not only the War on Poverty, but Special Olympics and the Peace Corps is a pretty remarkable life, and one that really touched me in terms of one can be very, very fulfilled and satisfied doing good for their fellow man, and Sarge epitomizes that constantly. And third is that you can be inspirational, which Carl was and Mary is and many other people out there, and really inspire change in America. And Carl did that. And so in a lot of ways, Carl is as inspiring and as important as my life, in my life, as Sergeant Shriver was.
Let's go back to the phones. John and Stevens Point, you're on Route 51 with David Bradley, Mary Patoka, and Bill Berry.
Thank you. Good morning. This is John Fenn. I know Bill and Mary. I'm a retired circuit court judge here at Stevens Point. And I knew Carl from many years back, and I just wanted to relate a story where back in the 90s, the early 90s, our local bar association, in conjunction with the Portage County Legal Aid Society, was discussing the problems that we were having to provide legal services on a pro bono basis. We had no management plan. We had basically one volunteer attorney would show up in the courthouse on a Friday afternoon in a conference room and be confronted by 20 persons who were seeking legal services, and it was just unmanageable. So we were trying to figure out ways to deal with it. And after I left that meeting, I ran into Carl in front of the post office in Stevens Point, and I said, "Carl, you know, here's the problem. We just can't manage the load of potential persons that we have to serve." And he took about 5 minutes and digested the problem, and he says, "Well, why don't I have one of my staff people screen all those applicants, and then we can set up the appointment process and just notify the attorney. You'll be seeing, you know, these five persons at these various times at a meeting in the courthouse." And that basically saved the legal aid program here in Stevens Point. That was Carl's doing in front of the post office, 5 minutes. We didn't need a committee. We didn't have a mission statement. Problem solved. And that was Carl.
Judge Fenn, thanks so much for the call. And Bill Berry, Carl Panasik was the guy with the Rubik's Cube, and he always managed to come up with that solution right on the spot.
Yeah, he did, and that was another thing that was very impressive, was that he didn't go through a lot of hoops. I mean, he did due diligence on his projects, but he got these things, like, immediately. And he already had – it's like he had already thought about that solution that Judge Fenn talked about, Mary, and he had this great intellect.
It was hard to ever be ahead of Carl. I don't know if it ever happened. He just was probably one of the most brilliant people I've ever met.
I want to focus now on one of those really creative solutions that he came up with for a whole host of local problems in the community of Wautoma, an old abandoned factory building, a decrepit school building, a brownfield site that needed to be cleaned up, a lack of affordable housing, and an inability of developmentally disabled people to get to work. Here's an interview recorded in 2008. You're going to hear Carl Panasik talking about his dream for Wautoma.
Well, you know, some people said, "Oh, you must have had a dream." I said, "No, I had a nightmare." It really started when the Speed Queen Company closed their doors in the 1980s, and basically abandoned two buildings in downtown Wautoma. We approached the Speed Queen Company about donating one of the buildings, and I can still remember we went in to meet with the president of Speed Queen, who was down in Ripon, and he thought we were going to make an offer to purchase the building because it had been on the market for 6 years. And we introduced ourselves, and he said, well, how much are you willing to offer us? And I said, well, we're going to give you the opportunity to give that building to us. And what did you say? I said, we're going to give you the opportunity to donate the building to for our use. And we walked through the tax advantages that they would accrue to him as a result, accrue to their company as a result, and then talked about the community good and social good that it could generate. And they gave us the first building. They didn't give us the second. They charged us for the second, but they still gave us a pretty good deal on it. Well, that was we turned the old Speed Queen building into a business incubator, and it was also the home of the we moved Fox Valley Technical College in there. We moved the job center in there, and we put a bunch of cap offices in there. That started generating some activity because we had the biggest building in town. We had the biggest conference room in town, and a lot of people were using our facility for that. Then the mayor of Wautoma called me. Lester Van Loon was his name. And
colorful character.
Yeah, well, you know, a very colorful character with that name. You know, everybody always thought of Professor Van Loon, which is Donald Duck's uncle, yeah. You know. But Lester called me and he goes, Carl, what are you going to do about that abandoned school that's a block away from you? And I said, what abandoned school? He goes, in Wautoma. I go, I know, Lester. I said, well, why do you think this is my problem? He goes, because I'm making it your problem. So Lester worked with us to set up a TIF district, the first TIF district in Washer County. We knocked the building down using TIF proceeds and put in streets, sewer, water. And then we built the first new single-family house that had been built in that community in 10 years, from 1988 to 1998. There, 10 years it went.
And now you've got a whole housing development.
The whole subdivision,
there, subdivision?
Is filled. There's transitional housing for victims of domestic violence. There's there's affordable housing for middle and low-income people. There's some housing for people with special needs. And we've taken that model, and we're now doing it about a mile away in another subdivision.
And, again, it's within walking distance of a place where particularly those with special needs are able to get employment, this bookbinding factory.
Then they can go to work there. There's a vitamin factory that's down there that's always looking for help. And there's Cummings Engine, which is in the industrial park about a mile away. And they're, you know, always looking for welders and engineers. So, yeah, it really has turned into an amazing project, and we've built more than 5% of the housing that's in Wautoma today. We built it.
That's the late Carl Panasik in his own words talking about a very innovative solution to a problem in Wautoma. Now, he didn't mention in that segment the cleanup of the brownfield site that was oil and gas contaminated soil on the grounds of the former school building, and he got that one fixed as he was doing everything else. Bill Berry, you were working with Carl at the time. You witnessed all of that. In fact, you employed me to go out and produce a documentary about all of this activity, which is how I first got turned on to just the incredible impact Carl Panasik had on the people he touched.
Right. Yeah, Glenn, you know, the one thing that jumped out at me in that little segment was when you talk about people with developmental disability needs, unless you really know what those needs are and how they're met in a housing situation, you don't understand how complicated and difficult it can be. Such little things as we take for granted as how you take a shower or how you move from one room to the next and the width of doors and things like that. It's a very complicated project and costly. And, you know, until cab services came around and play communities like that, people didn't have those options. And once they do, once you put them in a situation where they can become self-sufficient, you know, the promise is amazing.
David Bradley, your reaction to what Carl Panasik did in the city of Wautoma?
Well, it's community development, community economic development, jobs. I mean, those were central to Carl's mission. And some of that I was unaware of. The brownfields, I was unaware of his work on that. But I tell you, Carl's vision for, as I said, community development and jobs and training, that became the model for this program nationally. It really did. I remember many conversations with Carl talking about what he's doing up there, but Carl lecturing me about how we need to get the Federal Reserve or we need to get Wall Street investing in exactly those kind of programs that he operated up there. His footprint was far, far bigger than just the communities he worked in. His footprint is felt and seen nationwide.
And Mary Patoka, how is that project still affecting the lives of the people in Wautoma?
Well, it's Wautoma is a thriving community. Carl mentioned Cummins was an employer at that time. Cummins is left, but Mayville Engineering is there. So I think people see the community as a place to stay instead of leave. There's still work to be done, but much of the infrastructure, because of those developments, have really changed the face of that community.
I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guest today on Route 51, David Bradley of the National Community Action Foundation, Mary Patoka, the CEO and president of CAP Services in Stevens Point, and writer and columnist Bill Berry. When we come back, we will continue to look back at the life and achievements of Carl Pinazek, and we'll hear him talk about the need for and the promise of a new economy based on renewable energy. But first, here's Bessie Smith.
In my pocket, none and my friends, I haven't any. But if I ever get on my feet again, then I'll meet my long lost friend. It's mighty strange, without a doubt. Nobody knows you when you down and out. I mean, when you down and out.
Thank you to the business sponsors who help support WPR programs. Businesses like Spruce Tree Music and Repair, Pabst Theater, and Sprint Print play a huge role in the success of WPR. Your business can too. More information at WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from the Wausau River District, comprised of more than 70 independently owned businesses in downtown Wausau, offering unique finds in a classic Main Street setting. Experience the unexpected. WausauRiverDistrict.com.
You just call on me, brother.
As Bill Withers takes us into our final segment on Route 51, we look back at the legacy of Carl Pinazek and the impact of the organization he led, CAP Services of Stevens Point. With its current president and CEO, Mary Patoka, writer and columnist Bill Berry, and David Bradley, the co-founder and chief executive officer of the National Community Action Foundation in Washington. I'm Glenn Moberg. We've still got a few minutes left. We may be able to squeeze in one more phone call if you want to give us a jingle at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Mary Patoka, a caller who did not want to go on the air, wants to know how all of these programs are funded. Where's the money come from?
Well, I alluded to earlier, and Carl did as well in the clip you had, we have worked hard to diversify our funding base. So roughly at this point, I would say just over 51 or 52% of our funding does come from governmental sources, so federal, state, local government. We earn a chunk of our money, as well as find wonderful support from foundations, businesses, United Ways, individual donors. But our goal is to keep that mix as diversified as possible, in honor of Carl, to not put the agency at risk down the road.
Let's play one more segment of the interview I did with Carl Pinazek when he announced his retirement in 2008. Now, this is a timely topic as world leaders meet in Paris to address the pressing problem of global climate change. Here's what Carl Pinazek said about the need to create a new American economy based on renewable energy.
All the subsidies that we're using for oil production right now could be transferred over to subsidizing alternative energy. You could take $1 billion and you could stick it over in alternative energy and let the American free enterprise system start figuring out a way to make some of those projects.
This would be primarily for research, right?
Well, research, but research is fine, but you got to figure out a way to implement it. You know, because if you don't use it and sits on a shelf, that's crazy.
So this would be kind of a Manhattan-style project.
That's what
the project that led to the development of the nuclear bomb.
And look at everything that spun off of that. I mean, the whole magnetic resonance imaging was an outgrowth of atomic research. There's all kinds of things that have been happening as a result of that money that we invested in World War II. We're still seeing some of the benefits of it today. So I think that's, first of all, because if we can implement some of those alternative energy projects, it's a money, it's a job creator. We are this close, and I'm holding my fingers an inch apart. We are this close to making some of those alternative energy investments practical, even in Wisconsin. At the brewery that we are building in Amherst, we are putting huge solar panels on the roof because that solar panel will heat up the fermentation tanks for the beer production and reduce their energy losses by 30%. If solar works, the utilities are going to do it. They're not stupid. But it doesn't work right now because we don't have all the pieces designed yet.
Bill Berry, Carl Panasik, back in 2008, mentioning Central Waters Brewery, which is winning awards right now because of the environmentally conscious way that they brew beer.
Right, and I should add that Carl probably never drank a beer in his life. We drank Coca-Cola all the time. But, the point is that was 2008, Glenn, and you're seeing now reports, I'm sure we've all seen them, that say solar and wind are costing out equal to or even perhaps better than the traditional sources, petroleum resources. In 2008, Carl was seeing something that we're seeing play out right now.
David Bradley, you're a person who believes in some ways anyway in the power of government to affect positive change in people's lives. Should we have a Manhattan Project style all-out research effort to come up with new techniques and solutions for renewable energy?
Oh, absolutely. And let me make one preliminary comment, and that is that comments by Carl on solar was 2008. Well, in 2013, Goldman Sachs, Wall Street, invested in Community Action Solar Project, exactly what Carl was talking about. 2015, Silicon Valley, the solar industry there, is looking at this network for major solar initiative. Carl foresaw that 7 years ago, 8 years ago, 9 years ago, he's talking about it. So every time I hear Carl, I share Mary's comments and thoughts about. He was a leader, he was a visionary, but he was also very, very smart. I think that there is so many opportunities on the renewable side, particularly in the low-income community. And the caller that didn't want to be identified would be, I think, very, very satisfied and take comfort in the fact that investment, with some federal resources, but that massive investment is most likely going to be fulfilled from the private sector side using this network, these agencies, and delivering alternative energy in the low-income communities.
Bill Berry, we're down to our last minute. Your final thoughts on Carl Panasik and the work he did.
Well, I think we've pretty well covered it. My first thought is we already miss him a lot, and and so, he left so many footprints, and his vision will live on, and I guess that's the definition of a person who's made a difference in the world. Their legacy lives beyond their time on Earth.
And Mary Patoka, CAP Services is going to be celebrating its 50th anniversary next year. Carl Panasik has left that organization in pretty good hands for you.
Indeed. When Carl retired, we had some bracelets made, WWKD, what would Carl do? So as we move forward, he is with us, and we do miss him very much.
David Bradley, Mary Patoka, Bill Berry, thank you so much for being with us for what's been just a great hour looking back at a great man. Thank you all.
Thank you, Glenn.
Thank you so much.
Come with me to this house of living. Join with me and I'll join with you. Come
We want to thank today's guests, Mary Patoka, CEO and President of CAP Services of Stevens Point, David Bradley, co-founder and Chief Executive Officer of the National Community Action Foundation in Washington, D.C., and author and columnist Bill Berry. You can find out more about CAP Services at capservices.org. You can find out more about the National Community Action Foundation at ncaf.org. Bill Berry is the author of Banning DDT, How Citizen Activists in Wisconsin Led the Way, published by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press, and you can find out more at wisconsinhistory.org. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to our executive producer, Dean Kallenbach, our on-air producers, Jane Ritger and Lori Frazier. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Green Day, B.B. King, and Eric Clapton, Ray Charles, Rudy Valley, Bessie Smith, Bill Withers, and Hartsfield. Remember to follow us on Facebook. If you missed part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety at 7 o'clock Friday night on WHRM 90.9 FM Wausau. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.
Come with me to this house of living. Join with